Okay, open up the Committee on House Education for the 20th of February, 2015. Welcome. And actually, before we get going, I'd just like to introduce, we have a group of school board members here today that are from Leadership Oregon 2015, so we'd like to welcome you to the House Education Committee, and hopefully you're enjoying your time in Salem and learning lots of things. So anyway, welcome. Okay, first thing we're going to do, we're going to, again, kind of, we've got some legislators that need, they have other appointments and coming in and out, so we're going to open and close today. This is an open and close day, so I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2657. Is that Betty's bill?
Yeah. Yep.
Richard, want to read a summary?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2657 directs the State Board of Education to not consider days pupils absent when determining aggregate days membership for purposes of distributions from the state school fund. It provides that aggregate days membership be calculated based on the number of hours of instruction the pupil receives during the school year. It takes effect on July 1st, 2016. It has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Revenue. The committee has also been asked to consider Dash 2 amendments that change some of the language in the bill around partial time and allow the consideration of excused absences in the calculation.
Okay, thank you. So Representative Kopp. And then we're, those of you that are here to speak on the bill, we're going to close it and open it up a little later. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, committee. My name is Betty Kopp. I'm State Representative for House District 22. That's Woodburn, Jervis, Brooks, and North Salem.
Petersburg.
I am here to talk about an issue that, believe it or not, 10 years ago, almost probably maybe to the day, as a brand new freshman legislator, I brought this issue about student attendance to the Revenue Committee, and they kind of said, well, let's put it this way. They patted me on my head and said, nice try. Try to get another session. And so here I am 10 years later. And with the information that Oregon still has one of the nation's worst chronic absentee problems, a recent study ranked Oregon's fourth worst in student attendance for all fourth and eighth graders. One in five Oregon students are chronically absent from school. Nearly 100,000 students out of 550,000 miss approximately 3.5 weeks of school every year. Only half of our students attend school regularly, which regularly is defined in statute by attending 95% or more of the days. So it's not as bad as it really sounds. This bill is to take and look at attendance not from average daily attendance, but the current formula is about, yes, how and when students are enrolled, and therefore, and whether they're residence members. Average daily membership means the total of days a student is present and absent from school. The count tracks the number of children enrolled in the school district on an average daily basis over the course of the year. ADMR uses the basis of the funding formula to preserve the fiscal incentive to districts that perhaps, but it doesn't incentivize districts to spend a lot of time and money and efforts to go out and get those students. If a student did not attend school, class sizes are reduced, but under the funding formula, the revenue stays the same. The purpose of House Bill 2657 is to make a shift, and I want to refer to also the last couple of months, the State Board of Education has taken on this issue, and they are in the rulemaking process of looking at how many hours should a first grader be in school, how many hours should a fourth grader be in school. And it's a take on this same concept, so that the districts are being held accountable for their commitments that they make on their achievement compacts, and the and actually increases the amount of attendance time for students. This bill directs the State Board to not consider days pupil is absent when determining the aggregate days of membership. Doing so would explicitly encourage schools to emphasize attendance where the current fiscal system does not. It is just an absolute reverse on what we're currently doing. House Bill 2657 recognizes that schools and districts will need a period of time of adjustment and for increasing student attendance. So the proposal is that we have a phase-in, and that should be on your sheet there in front of you, a phase-in by school year, so that by the school year 2020, that then it's full implementation, that we would start with kindergarten next year and then move on to grades K-2 the following year, K-4 the next year, then K-8 and K-12. And as we have in our current statutes, excused absences are excused absences. There's no penalty for that. And in that excused absence, it would include, obviously, observations of religious holidays and other things that are normally in statute already. Committee, what I would share is that I recently spoke to the some administrators in Woodburn, and I asked them, I said, well, how's the attendance been? Because when I was the attendance administrator in 1994, about a third of our students were missing school every day. And they said that is absolutely no longer the situation. They have worked very hard because it was part of their achievement compact to really monitor attendance. And I think there's probably a lot of schools out there that are doing these good practices and putting resources to ensure students are in school. But if we make this change and reverse this, that we're that schools are being reimbursed on student attendance, not absences, it will help others. I think it'll give them the incentive to say, yes, we need our children in school. And I wish I could tell you lots of more stories, but I know another good colleague of mine is here to testify on his bills, and there are other people to ask questions. But I am definitely available to have conversations with any of you at any time. I sincerely believe this is maybe one of the most important things that we can do in order to get to our goal of 20-40-40. So any questions that I might answer briefly so that you can move on with your agenda?
Okay, any questions? Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Where will the, if there's a reduction in ADM paid to schools, where will those dollars go? So if less money is paid to the school districts, where will the excess of dollars then go?
Chair Daugherty and Representative Hack, it's an excellent question. The money stays in the formula, and so it is just redistributed, you know, the following month or the following quarter to all the other schools. So it's not changing the formula or doing...
Follow-up?
Yes.
What would that formula look like? So is the formula going to change then in how it's distributed? Because how would you... If not all the dollars are given out, then how would you catch up, so to speak? Because there would always be a surplus then. So does the formula change at that point?
When this is a Department of Education question for Brian Reeder.
Okay.
But when they run the formula and figure out the allocations, they maybe... Chair Daugherty can answer the question, and I'm a little apprehensive because I'm going to an important appointment here after I finish here. But the school could it goes to all the other schools in the state. It's divided.
So it'll be just redistributed to other schools?
Yes.
Whose attendance might be higher?
Yes.
But my question still would be, does the formula then change for the distribution? Because if you have a surplus of dollars, you're going to continue to have a surplus unless the formula changes to catch up. Because if the formula remains the same, then the dollar amount would be the same. And if your attendance has decreased and the amount of money that goes out to schools has decreased, because the funding level is what the funding level is, correct? Based on the number of ADM established. Right. So if that number has decreased, you would continue to have a surplus, and there's no way to catch up unless the formula has changed.
McLean might have.
It's okay. I think the question's really good, but I think we're starting to confuse what the formula is.
Right.
Right.
The formula is how many pupils are in your school.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it's how many pupils, who goes to your school. Right now there's a 10-day absenteeism. If you are gone 10 days in a row, you're dropped. You know, it's so there's how many kids are in your school. So I thought I understood it, so I want to make sure that
I think we'll say the formula stays the same. The money goes back to the Department of Education is how I would go through and say
that answers my question.
Yeah.
And right.
So in other words, you're still going to have where we got our, you know, 1.5, 1.25, that sort of thing.
So follow up. Then would those dollars, would it be up to the Department of Education where those dollars go then? What they're going to decide where that money is spent?
No, it's all done numerically. It's the next time that they calculate the formula, then it evens out over all the school districts. There's no change in the formula.
Direction.
I think I'm confusing
yeah,
you.
Another follow-up. I think I'll wait for ODE.
Yeah,
I'll wait for ODE.
And I think what it is these might be some things that the Department of Ed can
I'll
answer.
Wait for them.
To answer
thank you.
Much
thank you,
more
Representative Comp.
Clearly, Representative Pack, yes.
But,
thank
but,
you.
Appreciate it.
So basically, Representative Comp, the whole idea is that instead of we base it on, you know, an actual student being there day in and day out and absent and so on and so forth, it's going to be based on another sort of factor, which could be hours and that kind of thing?
It can be, yes. It could be hours, since that is what the Board of Education has recently just made those changes last month. That we do have a dash 2. Mm-hmm. Because originally we looked at how to calculate this by tenths in a day, which is extremely messy and complicated. And so we have a dash 2 amendment that takes all that out, and so that it's a computation that is too many papers and too many bills. But it is about the total number of days. Mm-hmm. It, as Representative McLean shared, and this happens in a lot of schools, a student's in school and they only attend like every 10th day. The purpose of this is so when you have a student that only attends every 10th day out of 150 school days in the year, so they only were there 15 days. And that is not an anomaly. That occurs more often than we'd like. And so the district gets full reimbursement for that student for 15 days of attendance. Whereas when we do this by attendance, not enrollment, mm-hmm. because they're still considered enrolled, that's how the school district gets the full compensation.
And there might be more of an incentive on a district to have make sure attendance programs and following up with kids and that kind of thing to make sure that they're fully attending school, even though they love to come to school every day and listen to their English teacher, which I was. But
right. Well, and the part of the phase-in is strategic, definitely, because what kindergartner doesn't love to go to school? And so if there's any problems or, you know, things that need to be smoothed out, it'll give the department time to adjust or end those things, because the attendance issues are generally at middle school and high school. And when students aren't attending regularly at middle school, it is one of those predictors that they probably will end up dropping out, and that's what we want to prevent.
Okay. Any other questions of Representative Kump? We're going to close the hearing and open it up. We've got some other people to speak on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my question, I just pose it out there. Maybe you want to address this, Representative Kump. It is my understanding that school districts have their own policies as far as what is an excused absence and not.
Yes.
I've recently been having conversations where some districts say that's not, and it blows my mind that what they're describing is not not an excused absence. So why wouldn't the school district change their policy and now it's easy to excuse an absence and we don't achieve the goal? The goal is not necessarily implementation of any one law. The goal is kids being in school. What would prevent a school district from changing their policy on absences to get into compliance without that impacting attendance for students?
Chair Doherty and Vice Chair Springer, what I would share, and there's several people in this room that have been school board members, that is why you have local control, so that a school board member would say, could I stand before my community and say I supported that? Because, yeah, you're technically correct that those options of what's excused and unexcused is something that local school districts can and do.
Thanks.
Okay, any other questions of Representative Kump? Okay, we're going to close
Chair,
the
work. I have a medical test coming up here in less than an hour, and I really apologize for being so scattered, so thank you.
It is. We understand. Good luck to you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so we're going to close public hearing on 2657, and then we're going to reopening it, those of you that have signed up. And so we're also next going to open up a public hearing on 2597. And again, we're going to close it and open it because we want to get our good friend from Ashland home on a Friday afternoon. Yes, we do.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Representative Peter Buckley, representing Ashland and South Jackson County in the legislature, and I appreciate your consideration. I have to actually get to a meeting at the Education Center in Medford by 6 o'clock tonight, and I look forward to that. Madam Chair, I'm bringing forward two bills today. The first one, as you just opened, is House Bill 2597, and interestingly enough, there's a kind of tie-in to Representative Compton.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to close this and open up a concurrent hearing.
Thank you so much.
So I'm going to close the work session or the public hearing on 2597 and open up a concurrent hearing on 2597 and House Bill 2673.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Interesting enough, these fit together very well with the issues that Representative Comp is bringing up about absenteeism, reasons for absenteeism, and addressing that in the most productive manner possible. In 2597, we have a student here from Eugene, Eugene School District, who will be able to talk about her experiences in terms of what's described as truancy and dealing with absenteeism and dealing with disabilities. And the bill 2597 is our proposal to adjust how districts work with students who should perhaps be on IEPs that have not been assessed for an IEP, and their absenteeism is due to the disability that they are facing. So I'll let others talk you through the bill on it. But basically, it's an attempt to make sure there's communication, to make sure there's an attempt that if a student is dealing with a disability, that the parents have the ability to request a IEP process to be engaged before the student is listed as truant, if the absenteeism is due to the disability the student is dealing with. To try again, the intent is to get the services to the student as quickly as possible in order to give that student the best chance to succeed in school, to deal with what the student is dealing with. In House Bill 2673, along the same lines in terms of the IEPs, and I know this committee probably wrestles with the whole the issue of the IEPs and with special ed, and I have to make very clear, there's no intention, is we don't want to have another unfunded mandate on our schools. That's not the intention of this bill. The intention of this bill is, again, to look at the process, to see if there's a way we can increase communication in the process, and you'll see in the statistics that my office has developed for this bill, bill, and they'll show you during the testimony. Overall, our districts, even though their resources are depleted in terms of the number of people they have to do the IEPs and the toll it takes on the faculty, we're actually getting most of our IEPs done in a fairly timely manner. However, we do still have kids falling through the cracks. We still have a process where if a student, for instance, is identified as possibly needing an IEP in March of an academic year, that student might not get that process completed until the following fall. Very small percentage of students we're talking about, but they still do exist. So I hope you'll take the time to listen to the presentation in terms of where the data is. One of the proposals in 2673 are pretty straightforward. The first is that a district would list the services available to their special education students, so the parents know what the district does have to offer and doesn't have to offer. The second part talks about the timeline of the IEP. Right now, Oregon has one of the longest timelines in the country compared to other states. We're significantly longer. We do 60 school days. Other states have a calendar days as their barometer. Of course, vacations enter into this. Different school schedules enter into this. And we are totally willing to, well, we hope that we'll have a discussion about what that 60 calendar day impact is, both on a school and on a family trying to get services to their student. And if there's a better way to go about it, we'd like to at least look to do that. And again, all this is done with a full awareness that we're not providing the resources to the districts. I was on the phone with the superintendent from the Grants Pass School District yesterday morning, and he explained that when he was in Minnesota at the school district he previously ran, the case ratio was 20 students for one special ed teacher. In Klamath Falls right now it's 50 students for one special ed teacher. So I greatly admire and respect the work that they're doing. I know they're under stress, but we are trying to make sure we're not letting any kids fall through the cracks on this. We plan to amend the bill to clarify that no matter what timeline we place in statute, a school and a parent could petition for additional time if necessary, just to make sure the communication is happening between the school and the parent. And I appreciate your time and consideration. I know these are thorny issues to wrestle through. Mm-hmm. I'd be glad to answer any questions. And again, my staff has done a lot of work to present information to you, and I just appreciate your consideration of the bills.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of Representative Buckley?
Not a question, but I want to. You point out that you're talking about a 60-day period of time. That really means that when a kid starts in September, they may not get anything until late December.
Chair Doherty and Representative Frederick, that's correct. It's 60 school days currently.
So that's basically 3 months or 3.5 months.
That's correct.
Before you're actually getting anything in because of vacations, et cetera.
So, correct.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair and then Representative, you'll see from the stats provided by the Department of Education, we actually are doing a fairly good job getting these plans done for most students, but there still are factors, and that's what we're trying to address. If you have winter break that comes in for 2 weeks, if you have a summer vacation, obviously, it can make it impossible for the student to get the services.
Thank you, Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We met in my office, and I appreciated our conversation. And I too have an autistic nephew, so I completely understand frustration of parents. But I also understand the frustration on the school district side, so I've got a question for you in that regard. You have to have a doctor's report, so the parent has to show up with the doctor's report, correct?
Madam Chair, members, it's my understanding that not in all cases does there need to be a doctor's report. And you'll see from the stats provided by ODE that the reason given for non-compliance with the 60-day schedule as currently envisioned, only a small percentage of those are because doctors have not responded, though I do know that it is a factor.
Follow up?
Yes.
And in addition to that, you have to have an administrator, teacher, behavioral specialist, parents, and so we're working with about 5, 6, maybe 7 different people's schedules, and I know districts work hard to accommodate everyone, and so you have, a lot of times districts have one behavioral specialist to hundreds and hundreds of children. So would it be fair to say that the problem is probably broader than just saying you need to do it in a shorter amount of time, but that we need to invest more in special education folks. So I want to make that point, and then I'd like you to respond to that, but because I do think that that's in our conversation too, that was very clear and evident, having a background working with school districts, that's the case. But I do, I am concerned that we're placing a great deal of burden on school districts trying to do this, and I'm not sure that this is something that's that they're capable of being able to do. And I'm sure we're going to hear from them, and I'm sure you might have some response to that as well, because we want everyone to be successful in this. And it, so, is this something that they believe that they can actually do?
Madam Chair, Representative, no, right now the discussions I've had with superintendents and with special ed directors is a lot of stress over this idea because of the financial restraints they're under and, as you mentioned, the lack of personnel. If nothing else, bringing this forward has created conversations around teacher training in the state of Oregon. If we had more of the special ed training as part of the regular instruction for teachers trained to be in general education, would that help in the situation? Would we be able to do the IEP process in a more effective manner? Ideas like that. I'm not wedded to the 60 days. I'm bringing forward the 60 calendar day idea as they say, well, what if we shifted to a calendar day model like other states have with an out if a district, because of financial restraints or an inability to get people to focus on the IEP and get it done, what if we set a different target but gave an out for a district? Is that a workable proposition? So again, I'm open to amending the bill to make it work for districts, and if nothing else, to put before your committee at least there's a problem. How do we resolve it? I know very, very painfully how inadequately we are funding special education, but at least in terms of the process that we're using, is there any way that we can tweak it to make sure no one falls through the cracks?
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Reardon.
Yeah, thank you for bringing this bill up, which I signed on to gladly. I think anything we can do to speed up that process, whether 60 days is a magic number, I don't know. So a simple technical question. If this need for an evaluation occurs at the end of the school year and the teacher is going on vacation, what do we do? So I don't know if we need to make an adjustment because of that. So.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think you'd have to, under this scenario, you would have the district and the parents basically say, we understand that we're going to need more time on this one, and we'll start up again in September if that's the reality of the situation.
Yeah. Okay. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I would like to see identified, and I don't know exactly how to get there, from certainly my school districts and others, maybe ODE can help us with this. I would like to see identified the barriers and address those barriers. And if it's a matter of not enough money to hire enough X people, then saying we have to, I don't know, gets us to the remedy. And I'd like to see us get to the remedy. As I was talking to the school board folks this morning, it does need to happen quicker than three and a half months into the school year. So I'd like to have identified those barriers and start talking about those barriers.
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Springer, that's exactly the intent of trying to bring this issue forward. The discussion on the number of speech pathologists available in the state comes up consistently from the districts I talk to. Well, they don't have a speech pathologist, or they're having to access the one that is in the entire region. So that's an obstacle. The more clarity we get on what those obstacles are, I think the better off, the better chance we'll have to be to help make progress here.
Okay, quick question.
Have you taken a look, thank you, Madam Chair, have you taken a look at the numbers of the increase in the number of students with special needs from, say, 5 or 10 years ago versus now, and how we can address those differently? And then also the number of people that are required to be at these meetings. Do we have to have all these folks at these meetings? Because that seems to also be an issue.
Madam Chair, Representative, those are great questions. And yes, the increase in the number of children in special education it has had a tremendous impact on our system. As the cause of that, there are people who are better informed than I am as to the cause of why more children are being identified. The process itself, again, one of the purpose of bringing forward the bill is to basically to review the process. And the questions you raise are absolutely valid. Is there a process that can work better? We have federal constraints as well, of course, federal requirements. But is there a way that we can streamline the process without diluting the process for the students involved, which nobody wants? We want the outcomes to be the best possible.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Representative Buckley. Have a safe trip
back down to
Ashland.
Thank you, members.
And with that, I'm going to close temporarily the concurrent hearing on House Bill 2597 and 2673. And we're going to open up a work session on House Bill 2680 just for the purpose of explaining the new fiscal information. And we are not moving this bill today. Okay, so Jan McComb, if you want to could read it for us, please.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2680 prohibits the use of results of statewide summative assessments developed by state-led consortiums to establish summative ratings of schools or to make summative evaluations of teachers or administrators. It directs the Superintendent of Public Instruction to convene a work group related to statewide summative assessments developed by the state-led consortium, declares an emergency effective on passage. The committee heard the bill on February the 9th.
Okay, thank you.
McComb. Chair Doherty, for the record, Jan McComb with the Oregon Department of Education. Did you want me to explain the Dash 3 amendment?
If you could just explain the Dash 3 amendments. Do we? Do we want to explain the Dash
3 amendments? Madam Chair, members,
I think it's more the fiscal, just the general. Yeah.
We were looking at this bill last night, and an issue came up that we thought might be prudent to address. And so we're working on some amendments, but we do want to have a little bit of time to run those past everybody to make sure everybody is fine with the amendments. Mm-hmm. And it's to address a potential fiscal if the bill were to pass without the amendment.
Okay. Thank you. And if we have the amendments are on, are the amendments on OLIS or not?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the amendments are on OLIS, and the issue that is concerned is the potential supplanting of federal funds.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so basically what it is in the amendments, do we have to request for a waiver for NCBLB? So, no child, but yeah, NCLB. So that's what it is. And so I just wanted to let people know that the reason we're not working is we have to make sure that we have the amendments so we do not jeopardize any of our federal funds. Okay, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for either you or the committee administrator, will we be looking at the Dash 2s or the Dash 3s or both? They were posted like within 35 minutes of each other.
Okay. As the chair is saying that we're going to look at both.
Okay.
At this moment.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Any questions? We just wanted to give you that information and say that we'll get the amendments out and all the information and work it at a little later date. Okay? Thank you very much. With that, I close the work session on House Bill 2680 and reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2597. Richard, if you could read the summary.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2597 directs the school district director for special education to evaluate children to determine if a child has a disability and if truancy or unexcused absence is the manifestation of that disability. If the request comes from a parent or if the child has not been evaluated within the previous 12 months. It also prohibits the scheduling of attendance conference until an evaluation has been conducted. It declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2015.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we have a few people signed up for this.
I think this is
Dr. Kimberly Sherman, Shane Jackson, and Grace Williams. And then we have some others signed up also. Okay, thank you, and just make sure you identify yourself for the record.
Would you like to go first, Gracie?
Sure.
I'll go first so she can see
okay.
how to do it.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Shane Jackson. I'm a lobbyist for the Autism Society of Oregon. It's a pleasure to be here today. Speaking to you today about House Bill 2597. I've had the great pleasure of meeting you, many of you and your staffs and your offices about this issue. So I'm going to be very brief real quick here just to get my idea into the record and call it that. HB 2597. Children who have or need an IEP and miss school because of an identifiable condition, such as autism spectrum disorder, need to be able to defend an excused absence as an expression of the condition if the school states otherwise. It goes without saying that unnecessary truancy actions don't help anyone. HB 2597 also gives parents a tool to advocate for their children and further facilitate a conversation, a constructive dialogue between schools and parents to work around the sometimes quickly evolving issues that accompany neurological conditions such as autism spectrum disorder. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just go state your name.
and where you're from.
For the record, Chairman Doherty and members of the committee, my name is Grace Williams. I am a student from Wellsprings Friends School in Eugene, Oregon. And that's it. I previously attended public school at South Eugene High School beginning in September of 2012. I am here to speak in favor of HB 2597. This bill would provide parents of a child with a disability who believe the child's absences are due to the disability the option of requesting that their child be evaluated for special education services, or if the child already has an IEP or Section 504 plan, to determine whether those plans are being properly followed before the parents are subjected to fines. I am here specifically because before I turned 18 last fall, I was one of those children and hope that I may speak on their behalf for this committee. Currently, 29% of children in Oregon with disabilities are considered truant. While I am also diagnosed with autism, my inability to regularly attend school stems from PTSD and depression resulting from a serious assault on school grounds when I was 13 years old. While my parents sought an evaluation for special education services from the school district for the next 15 months, no evaluation was provided until ordered by the ODE after my parents filed a complaint. In the meantime, attempting to attend school without special education services or accommodations was extremely difficult and eventually became impossible, leading to my failing all but three classes during my sophomore and junior years at South Eugene High School. Before this year, I only achieved 1.5 credits while attending school in Oregon for 2 years. Currently, Oregon law places the ultimate decision to whether an absence is excused in the hands of a school attendance officer. Even if a student's absences were excused by a parent or doctor, the school has final say. So a child who has cancer or can't enter the school building because a wheelchair ramp is broken or can't leave the house due to depression and anxiety can be deemed truant by the school. This bill would place a small check in the school's unquestionability authority. It does not apply to all truant children, only those whose parents believe that their truancy is due to their disability. The only requirement is that, on the parent's request, the special education director for the district consult with the evaluation team or the child's IEP team to determine if the child needs an evaluation or if the IEP is being properly implemented. It is a very small requirement when there is so much at stake, both for children who are seeing years of their education wasted by not being able to attend school and parents who face very significant fines, up to $1,000 plus court and attorney costs. After I was evaluated, I was determined eligible for an IEP and provided appropriate services, including the placement in my current school. My whole life has been turned around. I have excellent attendance, I have friends, and I've developed social skills for the first time. My GPA is 3.9. I just got that today. I hope to graduate next year with a regular Oregon diploma and attend college with the goal of someday becoming a virologist and working for the CDC and helping people around the world as a doctor. I strongly urge you that you support this bill and the many children with disabled conditions who are not able to fully access their education due to a lack of accommodation or specialized education services. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon, committee. Representative Doherty. I'm Kim Sherman. I'm actually signed up to speak on House Bill 2673, but as a former professor, put a microphone in front of me and I'll talk on anything. So I am also here in support of Gracie's bill, this bill you have in front of you. As a former school district administrator for special programs here in Oregon, it is a district's responsibility to conduct child find, which is the set of events and activities we go through to look at our students and ask ourselves, do any of these children bubble up to the level of needing some further considerations, either through a Section 504 support plan or through specialized education through the IDEA? It would be my hope that every school district looks at extreme absences as a possible question mark about whether we miss somebody in our child find, and that we would seek to have a conversation with the parents and with the child to determine if this is a child who is ripe for an evaluation for special education. Apparently not all districts do that. And as you know, rules and laws are written for people who don't do what some of us think of as common sense. So I am in full support of Gracie's bill here to just put that extra question mark in front of the truancy officers working in our school districts. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of the panelists? Okay, the reason you were on our list to call up for this, so that's why it is. But you're also on the list for that
thank
one,
you.
Too.
I appreciate
okay,
that.
Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Very, very effective.
Well done.
Okay, and then next, Danielle Sheldrake and Toby Rates.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and the House Education Committee. For the record, I am Danielle Sheldrake. I'm the Executive Administrator for Student Services for the Beaverton School District. The Beaverton School District, if you don't know, serves approximately 39,000 students, including 4,800 students with disabilities who are receiving special education services. We take our responsibility towards our students and families seriously and agree that excessive absenteeism is a significant concern for the state of Oregon. During the 2013-14 school year, approximately 580 students who were not eligible for special education services had at least one instance of truancy in our district. As a district, we realize there is a correlation between student attendance and a student's ability to be college and career ready. That is why, as a district and as a state, we have established prevention and outreach procedures to reconnect with students who are not attending school. So in Beaverton, and with the help of Education Northwest, we've established an early warning system where every week there's an email that goes to the counselors, which identifies students who have not been to school that week so that counselors can actively reach out to them. We also have an outreach specialist in our district who goes to students' homes, brings people that they're interested in learning about. So if they're interested in law, if they're interested in retail, bringing people to their house so they can engage with them and realize that they need to go to school in order to have that life they want to leave. Also, with the Oregon Department of Education, we have response to intervention and positive behavior intervention supports initiatives, which really hone in on looking at students who are not coming to school, who are not being successful in school, and trying interventions in order to find ways to re-engage them in our schools. However, the way the bill that is currently written, under federal and state special education law, a district only has an obligation to conduct an evaluation if the agency suspects or has reason to suspect, one, the student has a disability that has an adverse impact on the student's educational performance, and the student may need special education services as a result of the disability. So just because a student is truant, it does not necessarily mean that they have a disability or that they need special education services. In addition, under federal and state special education law, only a team may decide whether a student meets eligibility criteria for one of the disabilities under special education law. As the way the bill is currently written, it would be the special education director who would decide to evaluate a student. So if this bill were to move forward, our district would be looking at adding an additional 580 special education evaluations to our already taxed system. It would require us to add approximately a third additional staff to our special education staff, which we already struggle to hire, which would cost the district approximately $1.5 million. The bill would violate state and federal law regarding when a district has an obligation to conduct an evaluation, placing the district at risk for litigation. And the bill would also violate state and federal law by requiring the special education director to make the decision to evaluate a student for special education who has been truant versus an IEP team making the determination to evaluate a student who they suspect has a disability and may need special ed services. Bottom line, not all students who are truant have a disability and need special education instruction. Moreover, a special education director does not have the authority under state and federal law to determine whether a student should be evaluated and is eligible for special education services. School districts throughout Oregon have established policies and procedures to address the child find issues related to truant students that are consistent with existing federal and state special education laws. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. My name is Toby Rates. I reside at 8306 Northeast Thompson Street in Portland. I'm here in my capacity as the Executive Director of the Autism Society of Oregon, a board member of the Portland Asperger's Network, and mother of two children on the autism spectrum. The Autism Society of Oregon is the state's largest autism group and the only one that operates statewide. We represent everyone affected by autism, including individuals on the autism spectrum, their families, and their care providers. Our mission is to empower these individuals to improve the quality of their lives through support and information. Over 5,600 people access ASO as a resource and participate in ASO activities in all regions of the state. I'm here today in support of HB 2597, which will allow a determination of whether the absence from school of a child, including those with an IEP plan, is a manifestation of their disability and thus an excused absence. Currently, the school has the discretion to determine if an absence is excused or not. And of course, too many unexcused absences result in truancy actions against the parents. This bill would simply allow families to argue that the absence is not unexcused and should not result in a truancy action because it's a manifestation of the child's disability. Autism spectrum disorder is a highly variable disorder, and no two people manifest in the same way. We need to allow for this variation to be taken into account before subjecting a family to a truancy action. And I'm going to go off my notes for just a minute to say I don't know that I can add much to what Grace Williams said, because she gave a very effective presentation, but I do want to point out she is one person on the autism spectrum. And one thing that I really emphasize to people is that when you've met one person on the autism spectrum, you've met one person on the autism spectrum. It's a truism that's actually true. And for autism, there are many comorbid diagnoses, including anxiety, depression, OCD, and a bipolar disorder, Downs. All of these things can impact the ability of that child to actually get to school and may not be readily apparent as something as a wheelchair ramp is broken, but it's just as much a barrier to those children getting to school as a physical disability. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of the panelists? Representative McClain.
I wanted to ask you, you mentioned the number 580. Were those 580 people that you thought were truant in your school district last year?
Madam Chair and Representative McClain, that was the actual, we ran a report to find out how many students who do not have special education, are not eligible for special education services, had an instance of truancy last year. So it would be, they missed 8 half days within a 4-week period. So we had 580 students. But interestingly enough, we've seen improvement on our absentee rate. And actually someone came from OEIB to meet with us to ask us about what interventions we've been using in order to get to reconnect students back to school.
Okay. I have one follow-up. You were not unhappy. I mean, the only concern that you have, you're not unhappy with, you know, trying to make sure that truancy is true truancy. What you're a little bit concerned about is just your capacity to actually do the review.
Representative McClain, the way the bill is currently written, and there's a lot of things in there, and it's clear that the concern is around excessive absenteeism, and it doesn't necessarily align with what Grace's testimony was, and not that, you know, as a special ed director, when we have kids who are not coming to school because of autism, because of anxiety, we develop plans to work on re-entry to school. What can we do? How can we support students? The way the bill is written right now, if you had a kid who was truant, we I, the special ed director, would have to evaluate that student if they hadn't been evaluated in the last 12 mm-hmm. months. There's lots of different language in there. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately, I get that we want to catch students who aren't attending. We don't want to penalize students who have a health condition, who have a reason that they can't come mm-hmm. through a truancy process. However, the way the bill is written now doesn't necessarily align with those desires.
Okay. And you get to say, I think, or my opinion, or... Because we'll look at that.
Okay. Okay. My opinion about yeah. what the bill should say, or...
Sorry. No, your opinion on what it does say.
Well, my opinion about what the bill says is that what we would have to do is the special education director would have to evaluate students who are truant, who have an instance of truancy during the school year.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Reardon and Representative Brett Owen.
If somebody, and I don't know if it's the... panelist or somebody on the board could tell me what evaluation means, and I are as a special education director qualified to do an evaluation, because that, to me that sounds like checking the medical conditions and all of this. So I don't know what an evaluation is.
Madam Chair, Representative Reardon. So a special education evaluation is pretty extensive. So I, as a special education director, I have a special ed teaching license. So the only thing I'm allowed to do, because my license is active, is I could give an academic assessment to a student. But that is only one portion of a larger evaluation. So we have school psychologists who have to do behavioral, emotional assessments. If it's an autism evaluation, we have autism evaluation components that we have to do where we're observing the student on multiple occasions, interactions with the student, as well as formalized, normed tests, reference tests. So it's pretty extensive. If a student has a, especially if we have a health condition, if a student has a health condition, there may need to be a health assessment done by a medical professional and then also in consultation with our district nurse. Or if they have motor needs, it might have to be around a motor evaluation around orthopedic needs or fine motor, gross motor, different types of needs. So it's pretty extensive.
Okay, quickly.
So just to be clear, the as a director, mm-hmm. you're not really evaluating the child in that situation, are you? Or you're evaluating the process that was used to determine whether the student needs these particular services or needs this exception.
Mm-hmm. Madam Doherty, Representative Reardon, the way the bill is written is that I would be evaluating the student.
That's what I'm understanding.
Yeah. Okay. And so yeah. it may be that I look at the process, you know, if we have a student who's out and consult with a team about what maybe might next steps be to support a student. But
and you're not a medical doctor?
Nope, I'm not.
Okay. Representative Bredo, then Frederick, then.
Thank you, Chair Doherty. These children that are truant, is this later on in the school, you know, in their, would this be in secondary, would this be in K through 8, or where does this start?
Madam Chair, Representative Barreto, it's throughout. We actually have students at elementary level. We start to see a pattern with truancy. It really starts in those elementary grades, and it progressively gets worse. So we've looked at, we had recently done an attendance survey looking at student attendance for out of 72 days of school. And at elementary, we had some kids that were missing, you know, 4.5 days of school, and then at the secondary level, up to 12 days out of 72. So what we find are kids start the pattern of being, missing school, not coming to school at a young age, and then it progressively gets worse because it becomes more difficult to come to school as you lose or don't have skills comparable to peers.
So if you find this in their early years in school, mm-hmm. I mean, and the pattern follows, or they're evaluated early as with autism, I mean, doesn't that stay with them? So you're not continually evaluating as they get older. They've already been evaluated, or they already have this diagnosed before they ever enter school?
Madam Chair, Representative Barreto, yes, we have a child fine obligation under special education law to evaluate any student that we suspect has a disability. So we always try to intervene early. That's why we have early intervention, early childhood special education, and then our K-12 special education system. So that's always our priority, so that you can intervene. We can intervene with students. We can make sure if they need their special ed, if they are eligible for special education services, we can get them those services as quickly as possible.
One more. So later on, if the truancy continues or even gets worse, they've already been evaluated at a younger age, and if they've proven not to have any issues, then it's more of a behavioral problem then. So.
Madam Chair, Representative Barreto, it could be. So just because we evaluate a student in elementary school and find the student not eligible, it doesn't mean we won't come back and relook at it. Sometimes we have students who maybe we evaluated at a younger age, they didn't meet our criteria for eligibility, which is outlined by our OARs, but later something happens, something triggers, something changes in their life, and then they become eligible. That's why we have an ongoing process of looking at response to intervention, student data, because we want to catch those kids. I mean, that's been the great thing around our early warning system is, so kids who may have not have been a concern, they're not a kid who are, you know, aggressive, they're not acting out, so they may not be on someone's radar. They're coming up and in that counselor's box every single, you know, week. So they can say, well, this kid might not have been on my radar, but I need to intervene with them. I need to help them out. I need to support them.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Frederick.
You may want to take this offline or at least give me a longer answer. But sure. You started to say what you'd like to see. As I see the problem, we are labeling kids who have significant issues truant when they shouldn't be labeled truant. Mm-hmm. And so how do you, in fact, address that in Beaverton? How should we address that? You said, what would you like? What would you do? Mm-hmm. I want to know. What would you do?
Yeah. Well, Madam Chair, Representative Frederick, I think really what we need to look at is the issue of truancy, absence of special ed, and then I think there's this separate issue around students who have medical conditions and making sure, working with the Oregon Department of Education, that districts are prepared to follow up with students who have medical diagnoses and build plans so that the clear truant process doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And few districts, so it sounds like maybe in a couple districts they have really strong truancy practices. In Beaverton, we lost our truancy officer a long time ago with budget cuts, so that is another issue. So we really have to kind of look at that system.
Okay, pardon, just one quick
thing. We have two more bills to go.
I understand. So. I would flip that, mm-hmm. quite frankly. Looking at the whole issue of truancy is a huge issue.
It is.
I would suggest that we need to find out specifically how we deal with students who have these particular medical issues, because it's a much smaller issue than the whole truancy issue. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage you to find an answer to that particular question rather than going broad and saying we've got to do something about truancy. Thank you.
Fine. Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, would there be an option to hold harmless truancy fees if it was determined that an IEP was needed? So if the truancy officer were to refer this over to not necessarily just you, the behavioral specialist, but for them to go through the process and it's determined that there's an IEP?
Madam Chair, Representative Hack, yes. A lot of times we have kids who are on a 504 or they're on an IEP, and they'll have a health management plan. They'll have some kind of plan which will say the student may, you know, have excessive absenteeism due to their condition, such as cancer, such as anxiety, so that the student then isn't penalized for their attendance. So it's the team, goes back to the special ed team, obviously being aware of the medical conditions and then developing a plan, because we never want to penalize a student for their disability.
But could they be held harmless for anything previous up to the time? So if it was determined that they had an IEP in July or June, mm-hmm. at the end of the school year, and they'd been truant off and on throughout the year, but it took you a while to determine that. Could the family be held harmless and not have to pay any of those fees?
Well, I think they would need to go back and look at what the absence was for and if it was, in fact, due to a medical condition. And then I would assume, I don't know because we don't have a truancy officer, that they could be held harmless and wouldn't have to pay. But we'd have to have that medical information that says that, in fact, the disability will impact attendance.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Springer, do you have a question?
No, thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, thank you very much. That's all that we have signed up for 2597. Anyone else want to speak on it? Okay. Okay, thank you very much. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2597 and open up a public hearing on reopen the public hearing on 2673.
Where did that come from?
Where'd that come from?
What happened?
Huh? Okay, well, stand at ease for a minute.
Where'd that come from?
Something fall? Something
it's off the, it's a wooden van.
Oh,
off
yeah.
Off there.
Oh, my heavens.
It probably have maintenance called. Actually, the troopers are dealing with it, so they'll call.
Oh, good. Well, yeah, so see if she's okay. Do we have nurses in this place?
Yeah. Security guys out there. Okay. They would be able to call from there.
We didn't realize this was such an exciting bill.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes.
Mr. Trott, you brought some.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we're still on recess, but the young lady is fine. They're taking her to the hospital just to, you know, double check on this. And facilities is going to come in and take a few pictures of what it is. And then what we're going to do is recess is over. What we're going to do is we're going to open up another public hearing on House Bill 2657, and we're going to call up Andrew Dyke, and this is the we'll have it reread. We heard it at the very beginning because we're in and out and in and out, and this was one gentleman that could not make it back in at another time because we are going to reschedule the other one. So we're going to open up for right now 2657, and I call up Andrew Dyke. But could you again summarize what the bill is?
House Bill 2657 directs the State Board of Education to not consider the days pupils absent when determining aggregate days membership for purposes of distributions from the state school fund. It provides that aggregate days membership can be calculated based upon the number of hours of instruction a pupil receives during the year. It takes effect July 1st, 2016. There are -2 amendments that the committee has been asked to consider that allow excused absences.
Okay. And as I say, we are going to be continuing this, but Mr. Dyke might be able to answer some of the questions we had this morning when Rep. Comp was here, or earlier today.
So. Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair and Commission. For the record, I am Andrew Dyke, an economist and partner at the Oregon-based economics consulting firm, Echo Northwest. And I've prepared a few slides for you today that pull some findings for a more comprehensive analysis we completed in January on the district. And what I wanted to focus on today is the distributional effects of House Bill 2657, and I think may help shed some light on some of the questions that came up earlier. And as introduction, I think it's worth noting that this really is a redistributional question. The bill makes some changes to the state funding formula. The total number of dollars available to be distributed to districts is set earlier in the budget-making process. So the funding formula operates after that level is set. The formula determines where the dollars flow to. Changes in the formula under this bill, in any case, do not change the total amount of dollars available. It just determines where the dollars flow to. So I have three slides that will kind of get at that issue from a number of different perspectives. A little bit more background on what we did. We relied exclusively on data publicly available from the Department of Education. We focused on the academic year 2013-14 to address the question, how would the distribution of the state general purpose grant change with a formula change as anticipated by this bill? We didn't have access to information on excused versus unexcused absences, so this is strictly based on days attended versus versus days not attended. But that's the analysis we did. We, in essence, looked at how the funds were actually distributed and compared that to what would happen with a changed formula that only takes into account days students were actually enrolled.
Okay, thank you.
And so there will be a button here that will take us to the first slide, I think. There we go. So we look at this question from three different perspectives. Again, keeping in mind this is a redistributional question. The total number of dollars distributed does not change. The first perspective is at the highest level, and we're answering the question here with this slide. How big are the changes that we would see across districts? Some districts would get more funding, particularly those with higher attendance levels.
And that's with this legislation.
Exactly. And it's not exactly lined up. Again, we don't have data on the excused versus unexcused, but it's our attempt to look at these distributional issues. I wouldn't expect hugely different qualitative conclusions from the more refined analysis. So a couple of things I want you to take away from this chart. What this shows you is the number of districts that would experience different levels of allocation change, and specifically this is percent change in the per student general purpose grant allocation. It's a component of the state schools fund. It's not the whole thing. It's not all funds that districts receive, but it's the component that would be affected by this formula change. 197 districts in Oregon. First thing I want to point out is that the two bars in the middle represent most of the districts, a majority of districts, 112 of those 197 districts. Under this formula change, looking at that 2013-14 academic year, 112 out of 197 districts would see that per student allocation change by 1% or less, plus or minus. So for most districts, they would not see a large change in distribution. The other point I want to make is that if you were to add up the districts on the right, those are all the districts that would see an increase in their allocation. That is also a majority of districts. So if you just look across the state, count up the number of districts that, according to our analysis, would see an increase in funding, more than half would see an increase. It almost sounds like magic. It's not quite. Total dollars are the same. As you'll see in a minute, dramatically, not every district has the same number of students. Some districts are much larger than the state's smaller districts, and so that's what's allowing us to have more than half the districts see a funding increase with this proposal. The second perspective I wanted to address was how these impacts vary with district size. In the earlier slide, there were a number of districts with plus or minus 3% change, slightly larger change in general purpose grant allocation. So it's an important question to think about how those changes are distributed by size. So on the left, we have a little table that shows the size categories we're using for this particular analysis. Those could change. I give you the number of districts in each category, the share of students enrolled in those districts, and the number of districts that would see that relatively large change of plus or minus 3% in their general purpose grant allocation. A couple of things just generally to note and to remember about districts in Oregon. Most districts are pretty small. 112 of those 197 districts have enrollments of less than 1,000 students. Together, they comprise 7% of the state's total enrollment. So more than half the districts, a little less than 10% of total enrollment. On the other end of the spectrum, we have three very large districts in the state, Beaverton, Portland, Salem, Kaiser, that together comprise 22% of total enrollment. So that's something to keep in mind when looking at these numbers and thinking about the redistribution of funds. In the middle, districts with between 1,000 and 20,000 students, about 70 to 80% of total student enrollment. Last piece on that table, you'll notice that almost all of the districts with that relatively large change in per student allocation are in the smallest category, 19 of the 22 districts. So there is some redistribution there. What does that mean in dollar terms? The chart on the right shows the median percent change within each of those size categories. So think of these bars as the change for the typical district in per student allocation. Pretty clear pattern. The state's, it's only three districts, it's a lot of students. The state's three largest districts would see relatively larger increases in funding. The state's smallest districts typically would see relatively large increases. The districts of more moderate size in the middle would tend to see smaller or negative changes in their per student allocation. So that's a redistribution from the sort of more medium, moderately sized districts to the larger and smaller districts as a result of focusing on attendance as opposed to total days enrolled. And then finally, the third perspective, we wanted to look at this question from an equity lens. We know from the data that low-income students, students in high-poverty areas, attend school less frequently, have lower attendance rates than their more affluent peers. Just by virtue of the formula change that's proposed, that will tend, all else equal, to take funds from districts with a large share of low-income students and redistribute them to districts with relatively more affluent student populations. So we did want to look at this from that equity perspective. Yeah. We have a number of different bars here. I'll describe what they are, the categories, and then give you what the specific numbers mean. We have the highest poverty quartile of districts, second quartile, third quartile, and lowest quartile. Those bars on the left, the highest poverty, highest quartile districts are the set of districts that together have the state's highest poverty rates and comprise 25% about of the state's enrollment. The second quartile are the districts that have the next highest group of poverty rates and, again, enroll about 25% of the state's population on down the line. I want to focus on the darker bars first. Those are the impacts of the change in the formula under the current formula. Under the current formula, districts receive additional weight for students having a higher poverty rate. The weight is 0.25, so to a first approximation, if there's a low-income student in your district, that student's enrollment counts for 1.25 times that of a non-low-income student. So that's what that weight does. It redistributes funds in the current formula from lower poverty to higher poverty districts to reflect the increased needs of serving more disadvantaged populations. So the dark blue bars show the median district's percent change in allocation under the formula change. As we saw overall, across the board, across all categories, the typical district will see an increase in funding, but that increase is much smaller for the most impoverished districts or districts serving the most impoverished students, with stronger increases in the more affluent districts. We ran a fairly simple policy experiment. Well, what would happen can we mitigate that if we increase the formula weight on poverty in addition to changing the formula to look only at days present instead of days present and days absent? In this case, the light blue bars you're looking at change the formula to give an extra weight to poverty of 0.3 instead of 0.25. We don't need to dwell on the specific numbers too much, but not surprisingly, this does, with a fairly straightforward change, mitigate the redistribution of funds that would happen under the formula change. We see the most impoverished districts seeing a larger increase in their funds. The increases for more affluent districts going down. In this particular case, the most affluent districts would see a decline typically as a result of these two formula changes. There's nothing magic about 0.3. You could pick 0.27, 0.35, et cetera. That's a policy question about the state's goals for providing funds to low-income students versus high-income students. And that concludes my pictures. Happy to take questions.
Questions? Representative Reardon?
Just clarification, please. The charts were based on full implementation of the program?
That's correct.
After
that's correct.
2021.
Yep, so it's saying, this specific numbers are taking 2013-14. We know how the funds were actually distributed and saying, what if instead of the current formula, we used a formula that was based on attendance? What would have happened in 2013-14?
Okay. Other questions?
So this is sort of the biggest impact you would see if full implementation happened right away. Under a phased implementation, the changes would be much smaller and ramp up over time.
And there's a phase-in in the bill.
That's correct.
So, okay. Yeah. Representative Brettel and Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it this new formula, would it be more complicated to follow and track, more expensive, or is it a non-issue?
Well, I can't speak to specific dollars. We didn't look into that. But on its face, as we've modeled it, which is simply to replace the enrollment component of the formula with an attendance-based measure at the district level. Both measures are calculated routinely by the district. There's no significant change. It's substituting one set of available numbers for another. Again, we didn't have access to the excused versus unexcused absences question. That's a different question.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You may have answered a little bit of what by that last comment. It occurs to me that we have a regular flu epidemic come through. And it also occurs to me that in many of those, that it happens across the districts, but there is really a significant impact, especially on high poverty schools. So this would create even more of a problem for them, as I see it. Am I missing something here?
Potentially. There are any number of reasons why low-income students do not attend school as regularly, and anything that exacerbates that would exacerbate the impact in the formula.
We have some significant issues regarding dental efforts as well because of that. So I'm concerned about this particular effort, especially as it clearly affects high poverty schools.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So is this formula proposed in the bill, or is this something you're proposing as a consequence of the bill? Can you clarify that for me?
Yes. So these numbers compare the existing formula and the dollars that were allocated to a formula that, and happy to follow up with the specific details after the fact if necessary. But looks at how that would change if the formula component that counts daily counts enrollment were replaced by attendance, which is identical to counting days that students were present and ignoring the days they were absent. These don't take into account the proposed phase-in. They do not look at the difference, in including versus excluding excused absences or unexcused absences.
So poor schools are going to get poorer. Schools that are functioning well are going to be better off.
Well, I would say that first, the big picture, and people will differ in what a big change is, but that most of the change is pretty small. Most districts are pretty close to average in terms of their attendance. Districts that are well above average will gain more, and districts that are well below average will gain less. But most of the changes are relatively small.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to be in recess just for a moment. Yeah, fewer PE people, less resource, or less recess. Okay, what we're going to do with that, I'm going to close the hearing, close the public hearing on House Bill 2657, and we are going to be carrying over House Bill 2673, House Bill 2597, and House Bill 2657. We still have people that want to speak on these bills that are either in the building or close by. And so we just wanted to make sure that we accommodated the people that came a little ways. And what we will do is we will let you all know fairly soon when they are going to be rescheduled. And so, for the school board members that are here, we usually don't have a day like this. We try to keep our presenters and our people that are speaking as safe as possible. But luckily you saw that our state troopers and maintenance and the Salem Fire Department was very... very speedy and got here. So anyway, with that, any questions, any comments? Okay, with that, I close the House Education. With that, I close the House Education.